Christopher Weaver, lawyer to the Adjutant General, Alaska National Guard.
Richard Hildreth, Joint Staff Sergeant Major and liaison to rural communities and tribes.
Bob Dole, Deputy Commissioner, State of Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
Laurie Hummel, I'm Commissioner of Alaska's Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and Adjutant General of the Alaska National Guard. One of the reasons that we love to come out to Bethel and the YK area is to inform people about the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs Rural Engagement Initiative. And so the Rural Engagement Initiative is really all about trying to grow back the conditions for enlistment and continued military service by people in rural Alaskan communities. And we all know what a vital part of the community the National Guard used to play in rural Alaska. And we hear all the time from communities how they're sad about the lack of National Guard participation nowadays and how it's dropped off over the last couple of decades. And so we're interested in trying to engender interest on the part of young people in the rural communities to join the military. And so we're using as a stepping stone to that the Alaska State Defense Force, which is a state militia that is completely controlled by the state, reports through the Adjutant General to the governor of Alaska. And the State Defense Force is primarily a volunteer force, although they can be paid for participation in exercises. But they're a militia with a mission essential task list that is set by the state of Alaska. And so we are interested in seeding detachments of the State Defense Force across rural Alaska. And we're happy to report that in January, a small communications detachment did stand up here in Bethel. So we're excited about the possibilities and the opportunities. And so the State Defense Force detachment in a particular community might meet one weekend a month, and they would have a list of things that they would train to. And the National Guard would help by providing trainers when they can, and cadre from the State Defense Force would come out, and they would train on certain tasks, such as maybe first aid, first responder types of activities, or maybe we would be able to train State Defense Force individuals to assist with traffic control points or checking on neighbors in times of an emergency. And so the idea would be that we could grow participation in the State Defense Force and kind of inculcate in those State Defense Force members the sorts of characteristics that military members have. And so we hope that by joining and having fun and finding really a meaningful community purpose in participation in the State Defense Force, that people would be more likely to ask, hey, what's the Alaska National Guard all about? Or maybe I might be interested in joining the Marine Corps or the Air Force or going into military service. And so it's kind of a stepping stone approach to growing conditions for military service in greater numbers in rural Alaska.
So what are the duties and responsibilities of the communication unit of the State Defense Force that started in Bethel?
This is Bob again. The communications detachment here as part of the Alaska State Defense Force, it provides in the event of an emergency where either the primary communications infrastructure is taken down by a storm or other disaster, or where there's a disaster of such magnitude it can't handle all of the information that needs to be sent, it provides another means to do so. They train on working with high-frequency radios and satellite communications gear and have started fielding that here so that they can provide that backup. The Alaska State Defense Force Communications Detachment here in Bethel is a backup communications service available to the community and the region in the event of a disaster where normal channels aren't available, and they can reach out by satellite or high-frequency radios, both of which won't have much of a local requirement for support to transmit and receive information that would be vital to assisting in time of disaster or emergency.
And when did that unit begin?
January of this year, it stood up and we started flowing equipment out here and training people.
So what are the incentives for joining the Alaska State Defense Force?
The Alaska State Defense Force, the major incentive to join is to fulfill a call or a need for service, to be there for your fellow Alaskans, to know that you can be part of the solution in time of emergency or time of disaster, that you can be there to help when help is needed most. That is the reason when I talk to Alaska State Defense Force members that they all join. There is an important second set of qualities, though, I think it brings to the community and to the individual, and that is what you get by being part of a organization like this is value added. You learn how to work as a team. You learn how to work with others. You learn problem solving in difficult situations. You learn how to reach out beyond the area that many people would otherwise reach out. You'll learn some skills such as first aid, some negotiation skills, some skills in working with a disaster response, how to communicate information to a disaster response entity from outside. And all of these together are things that our communities need and want to make them stronger. And also it makes these individuals a far greater contributor to the community, taking care of both their call for service and benefiting their community.
So it sounds very altruistic. Are there state service benefits or monetary benefits?
There are no direct monetary benefits at this time. Now, granted, those skills may make you more employable for a position or a job, or you may be able to grow it into your own business from the skills you gain there, but there are no state benefits at this time.
So this is Lori Hummel, and I would add to that the Alaska State Defense Force is essentially a volunteer organization. However, they can be paid for participation in exercises, and they can also be paid through a mechanism called State Active Duty Funds for actual assistance in case of an emergency. And so most of our State Defense Force personnel, they train as volunteers, but we have activated them in service to the state. Last year, during the time of all the wildfires, our State Defense Force personnel acted as phone banks for families and individuals who needed to call in with questions or wanted to get the paperwork started in order to get grants for reimbursement of loss. And so we do have mechanisms from time to time, and we hope to have more so that State Defense Force members can be compensated for their exercise participation and for rendering assistance in times of actual emergency or disasters.
And how many people are in the unit in Bethel?
I believe that there are three to four who were the initial members of the detachment.
So this Alaska State Defense Force expansion is meant to recruit more people from rural communities into the National Guard, into other branches of the military. How is the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs working on that transition and on that encouragement?
Well, that's our long-term goal, but our short-term goal is to just gain participation by Alaskans into the State Defense Force for its own sake and for their own sake. And so we think that this growth of conditions that will set the scene for communities to have better opportunities for enlistment and service in the Alaska National Guard or the other service branches, we know that that's going to take some time. It's been really a couple of generations since rural communities in Alaska had robust presence in the military. And so some of that military tradition has waned a bit. And we're very hopeful that the many military veterans who live in rural Alaska will gather together in their communities and reach out to the young people in the schools and in their areas to tell them their stories, to talk to them about what it was like to be part of a great team and what it was like to be in the military. And so we're hopeful that our veterans are going to band together and assist us in spreading the word about what military membership can mean to an individual as well as to a community.
So as I understand, part of wanting to expand the number of National Guard members in Alaska is also related to making the federal National Guard standards more accessible to Alaska, particularly to rural Alaska?
So we kind of have a couple of efforts going on at the same time. And one of the things that we have tried to do is to bring federal military leadership out to Bethel and to the surrounding communities around Bethel to have them understand the challenges that we face here in Alaska. Sparse infrastructure, challenging climate and weather, vast distances. And to that end, we've had visits by the Director of the Army National Guard, by the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, and by senior level leaders from the federal, the National Army National Guard, who are involved in recruiting and retention and personnel. And we have socialized with the Alaska Federation of Natives the idea of bringing back some of the enlistment waivers that we had back in the days of the Eskimo Scouts. And specifically, we've requested a waiver from a couple of types of testing that is normally done to recruits. And I'm going to ask Sergeant Major Hildreth to come and give details about that, because he really has been the driving force behind this effort to enable some waivers so that we can get more people enlisted from the area.
You're attempting to try to get six different areas waived in the enlistment criteria. So everybody has to abide by a certain amount of restrictions to enlist into the service. You know, what type of education do you have? What type of test scores do you earn? What type of medical fitness do you carry when you go meet the medical doctor? Your moral background, what type of criminal violations do you have in your past that maybe we can or cannot work with? So when we were talking to the Alaska Federation of Natives, we were talking about soliciting the Department of Defense for certain waivers to assist some of these students in the rural communities who are having a hard time passing the standardized testing for the graduation exams and getting their high school diplomas. We were interested in getting their support to have them understand that we are interested in the skills that those kids have in the villages that sometimes aren't measured by the standard testing the Army uses. It's called the ASVAB, the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery Test. It's a great test, but sometimes it doesn't measure the inherent knowledge that the kids in the rural communities have through their lifestyle of hunting and fishing and navigating across the terrain. So AFN was supportive of us seeking some assistance from the Department of Defense. We've done a number of orientation visits for some of these people, the policymakers and the policy writers who work in Washington. You know, when we call to Washington and we're asking for some assistance, we're trying to give them the bigger picture of how vast and how far Alaska villages are from other villages, the lack of infrastructure, the lack of roads, but that the skills that these kids need are exactly what we want if we want to be champions of the Arctic, and there's no better person to help us become better capable, better able to serve our community than the people that live in these communities who are able to navigate and operate and excel in these cold environments. You know, when it's 50 below and the wind's blowing, you know, there's not too many people that are going to come from Alabama that are going to be prepared to survive in this environment, but it's the people that live here and that operate here that navigate and move around day to day that are the primary functionaries that we have to lean on to help us make sure that we can help safeguard the communities. So as we talk to these leaders in Washington, we try to impress upon them the skills that these people have that aren't measured in that test. I think they're starting to see some of that, what we're talking about, as we bring them to these communities. We talk, we bring them into a village, we walk them through the village, we visit a school, we see the construct of a K through 12 school for a village of 800, and there's, you know, a handful of teachers, a small staff, trying to, you know, get the curriculum completed. But, you know, the kids are also trying to coexist with a subsistence lifestyle at the home. So they're trapped between these two worlds, and we're trying to make sure that we provide them a way to possibly serve their country and improve themselves a little bit, bring back a skill set back to the village. You know, we hear quite often from the native leaders that they want to have those skill sets that the military brings to them: leadership, resiliency, community spirit, compassion to serve, and the compassion to provide aid to others. And those are all great things that the Guard and the military bring to people's training. And the villages are telling us loudly that they want those skills back in the village. So we are, you know, we want to make sure that we provide that opportunity. But we were not looking for an enduring forever waiver. We wanted to provide a mechanism where we were allowed to enlist some more kids with some waivers, but that we weaned ourselves off of that through some increased emphasis from the tribal leaders and from the village leaders, that in order for us to meet halfway in this program, we'll do our best to get some waivers, but it's also incumbent upon the villages and the tribes and the local leaders to help recognize that we can't simply rely on these waivers for an enduring process, that we're going to have to improve the skill sets of the kids and ensure that the education is a vital part of their growth in the village, and that we provide a good, positive outlets for kids to do something productive for the community.
So getting enlistment waivers means relaxing standards, education standards, for people wanting to enlist in the National Guard from Alaska?
Well, from these rural communities, the National Guard Bureau recognized that the school system's a little bit different. The dropout rates are extremely high, and some of the test scores on average are a little bit lower. So what they're talking about right now, we're still in a negotiation process with National Guard Bureau, trying to define what exactly is going to be that threshold that they're going to be comfortable allowing us to possibly increase the recruitment, and they're going to give us a little bit more ability to enlist GED holders. So normally they were holding the line that very seldom they would allow GED holders to enlist. There's a ratio every year that the National Guard Bureau and the Department of Defense every year tries to maintain a high standard for enlistment criteria to make sure that it's the most well-trained and most educated military that's out there. But they're going to allow us the potential to enlist a few more GEDs than we normally would get each year. And they're going to potentially allow us a little bit more latitude in the enlistment score. So the minimum score most kids are required to enlist is a 31 on the ASVAB. They may allow us to go a little bit below that. It's called a Cat 4. Every year, every service allows a certain percentage of Cat 4s to enlist: the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Marines. Every service does it. But Guard Bureau recognized that potentially we may need a couple more than another state, so we may get a few more allowances. But that doesn't mean those kids don't have the skills to perform the certain function. They all have to have the line score for the job they're enlisting for. They all have to be able to perform all the physical and mental functions that skill is required to achieve. And, you know, there's an exhaustive training process that occurs at all the training bases. So, you know, we're not looking to bring in people that are, you know, in dire need of some basic elementary education. We're going to give a hand up to a couple of folks that may need just that little push to get beyond the start gate. And but the Army has a very well practiced training regimen where they bring people from all different facets of life, from all different cultures, from all different language backgrounds, from all the different education systems, and they train them to a minimum Army standard to become proficient in their job that they're trained to become in.
And so there's been this steep decline in National Guard membership within the YK Delta over the course of several decades. So when was it at its peak, and how much were there? Then where is it now?
This is Richard Hildreth. I think at the peak would have been the late 80s or the early 90s. And I was a member of the Guard here in the unit here in Bethel. And I think the numbers that I recall during the peak were well over 600 soldiers assigned to the area, just in the Bethel area alone. And there was, you know, a battalion in Nome. There was a battalion in Kotzebue. And each one of those had 400 to 500 soldiers in each one of those. So the Guard was a very large product all over the western and northern Alaska. Currently, right now, we've seen sharp, dramatic reduction in our forces, and that's through multiple processes, through a couple deployments, through retirements, through medical separations, through people that just serve their first enlistment and then they don't reenlist. So I think the numbers that we see and we hear quite often right now, it's below 50 that are in the area, maybe even below that, but we're trying very hard. We have a good recruiter locally stationed. His name is Sergeant Masterman. He travels quite often to a lot of villages. He's been very productive this past year. He's got a lot of great enlistments that have happened. So soon enough, we'll have some new kids returning from training that'll be drilling here locally. And we're hoping that with the potential for some of these enlistment waivers, that maybe that population increases as he's more successful.
National Guard members came out to the YK Delta during the K-300 to help out with that race. Also, the Akiak Dash and the Bogus 150 that were happening at the same time. And that, as I understand it, was meant to, one, serve as a training exercise for National Guard members, but two, also to have a connection between communities and the National Guard members so them to see each other face-to-face and to see, and for the YK Delta to see the National Guard as a presence that could be helpful to the Delta. Are there any other sort of displays of that kind planned for the region?
So in general, we're making a real effort, especially in the Alaska Army National Guard, to do our annual training exercises off the road system and out in communities. And so you're right. We had members of the Battlefield Surveillance Brigade that were helping with the K-300, and they were actually training at the same time. So it was a win-win. We had soldiers training, and we had community members who were able to watch and interact with them. Also, last March, we had probably a couple of hundred soldiers here in Bethel. We did a parachute drop, and we had our Arctic tracked vehicles, the SUSVs, up and down the frozen rivers, and we had soldiers that were training for school kids, and we had folks watching the training that was going on. And it's just a great opportunity for our soldiers to show off their stuff and interact with, you know, the people that they serve. We were in Bethel earlier this year, also doing Arctic training in the community. And I don't know exactly what date we'll be back out in the community for training.
The Bravo Company Command is already in discussion with the K-300 staff to provide a assistance at the Tuluksak checkpoint. So it provides a mechanism for our soldiers to learn driving skills with the various pieces of equipment that we have. They get to employ their cold weather equipment to set up a base camp. They get to employ the different mechanisms it takes to keep an operational OP, observation post, operational during a 24-hour, 48-hour cold weather environment. So it works the scheduling mechanism, it works the leadership models, it works the various elements of a team to employ the equipment and to maintain the radios and the living conditions, and it also allows them then that ability to interact with the community and support a good community event. And it's a great training for our soldiers to learn those great cold weather skills that they don't necessarily get sometimes working out of Anchorage.
So there was an investigation done by KTOO and Juno, the radio station, last year released about the National Guard and sexual assault that was happening to some members and about that not being responded to in the best manner. And so what would you tell people who want to enlist and to their family members about what's been done to fix that, to mitigate that, and so people feel safe joining the National Guard?
This is Laurie Hummel. I would respond that most every Alaskan knows that the Alaska National Guard went through some rough times, a really rough patch. And that's a shame, and that's a blemish on the organization, but it's also in our rearview mirror. And Governor Walker responded by selecting a new adjutant general, and that's me. And I selected by picking a team of leaders that we can count on for ethical and moral leadership. And we went to work digging into our processes, how we communicate with one another, how we lead, how we are transparent in our actions. And we also went to work developing the Alaska Code of Military Justice, which is a set of rules by which we will make sure that going forward, our organization is worthy of its membership and each member is worthy of the organization. And so we worked really hard with the legislature to put together this Code of Military Justice. It was passed by the legislature this spring, and Saturday, August 6th, we anticipate that the governor is going to sign House Bill 126, the Alaska Code of Military Justice, into law. And so I would say that this is a time of great change in the Alaska National Guard, and it's a time of great optimism. Don't take my word for it, that anyone who doubts that, just find a member, any member of the Alaska National Guard, and ask him or her how they feel about what they do and how they feel about their service in the organization.
So if Governor Bill Walker signs this new measure into law on Saturday, August 6th, what will change within the National Guard?
Hi, Christopher Weaver, judge advocate for and lawyer to the Adjutant General. It's a code of military justice, similar to the Uniform Code of Military Justice that active duty uses. It's also, because guards are a little bit different, it also incorporates the best practices from other states or experience from other states that have worked well before. It gives leadership the opportunity to address misconduct right at the root. So if something happens, we can fix the problem, oftentimes through disciplinary process, but not necessarily through a disciplinary process. But it gives leadership the ability to hold soldiers accountable for their conduct.
This is Bob Dole. The Alaska Code of Military Justice fills a hole that was identified in the tool set available for commanders to maintain good order and discipline and curb unacceptable conduct. This was identified in two key areas. First, the National Guard Bureau Office of Complex Investigations sent a team out here to look at the command environment in the Alaska National Guard. They identified a need for reform in this area. Second, when Governor Walker came into office, he appointed retired Judge Collins to take an independent look at the Alaska National Guard, determine what was necessary and appropriate for it to go forward and to address this area. And she, too, validated the need for reform in this area. And working closely with the legislature over two sessions, we've been able to find a solution that will allow us to go forward that we anticipate Governor Walker will be signing shortly.
This is Laurie Hummel. So the Alaska Code of Military Justice effectively is a set of rules, a code of conduct that tells every member of our organization the left and right limits for acceptable behavior. And it gives the command team the ability to make corrections and show people early on, like Chris said, at the root of the behavior, we can make corrections so that we make sure that small problems don't become big problems. Because we all know that if you don't address a small problem, it can snowball. And that's one of the things that beset the organization in the past.
Well, thank you all for coming out.
Our pleasure.